Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have a special author to share with you. She is Catherine M. Walker. Catherine was born in a small country town in Western Australia, but now resides in Canberra in the Australian Capital Territory. Not being interested in sports, she dived into reading and writing. Determined to enter a short story competition while still in high school, Catherine and her best friend started writing. Six exercise books later, they both realized that perhaps the story was a little long. But still, they shrugged off the competition and continued with what became the first book and then launched into the second. Being an author and publishing was a one-day dream that stretched back to that time in high school. Nothing ever came of that first book. Life moved on and Catherine added travel and photography to those interests. Well, now, years later, Catherine realized that one day never happens. Life will pass you by if you let it. And determined to remedy that, she looked through her files of stories already written and yet put them all aside. Instead, she fired up Scrivener, settled on writing a new series, one that would be finished and published. And Shattering Dreams is Catherine's debut book in the Being of Dreams epic fantasy series. And she is here with me to share her story and her book. So welcome to the network, Catherine.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you for joining us all the way from Australia.
No problem. It's a little early in the morning here, but I'm glad to be.
Good. Well, now, you knew then at an early age that writing could be your calling. That's interesting how a young person has that realization. Just take us back a little bit so we could move forward. What were your thoughts when you were a young person? Why was writing so attractive to you?
Probably because it was that escape that you get when you're writing something. So your imagination just fires up and you've got that blank page in front of you. And then you just write. And what's even more startling at the other end of it is quite often when you read it back to yourself and think, oh my God, did I actually write that? and just seeing that whole story starting to unfold in front of you, all of the characters and their lives and the things that happen.
It is exciting, isn't it? You look back, and I've done that myself, and you think, that came from me?
Exactly. And sometimes it's a little bit hard to believe.
I know.
And again, there's some other stuff that you write, and then you put back in your drawer and think, okay, that's never coming out again.
I have some of those as well. That's funny. So where did the idea for Shattering Dreams come from?
Initially came from a couple of conversations with different people where they were always saying things like, you know, I wish I was that person, you know, the actor or the singer or someone else's life, because they thought that person had everything handed to them in life. And I would always like look at them and say, well, not really, you know, everybody has their trials in life and the things that don't quite go right. And I guess it started from there that the grass isn't greener always on the other side of the fence, that everybody has a price to pay for the life that they have.
I think that's very interesting, and I want to talk a little bit later about some of your themes, but as you're saying that, I'm just thinking of some of the recent suicides we've heard of. Kate Spade, you know, a fashion icon that makes handbags, and Anthony Bourdain, who got this successful restaurant and travel show, and you look at these people and think, oh, they have it all, and yet something so serious was going on in their lives that they felt that they needed to put an end to it. So that's an interesting theme, I think, that's very relevant to today.
Yeah, exactly. You just never know what people are actually going through in their own life. And that's a part of that what I tried to actually put in the book, that these people with seemingly everything at their feet, it's not quite what people think, and their lives are perhaps a little bit more difficult than what people think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we can talk about that later. But first, I want to get a little sneak peek into your book. So give us an idea of what the book is about, just to entice our readers.
Okay. It's basically, so it's epic fantasy. It's a world where magic has gone just a little bit wrong over generations. And Alex, who is the prince, the fourth son of the king, and his friends get embroiled in a kidnap attempt. And basically, in investigating that, they start unraveling this whole web of lies, deceit, and betrayal that basically surround them and the lives that they live. And in doing that, they then have to confront the darker side of their powers. And in doing that, they risk the thing that is their greatest nightmare in their life. But they have to do that to protect themselves and each other.
Magic gone wrong.
Yeah, generations ago. Magic in this world, generations earlier, hadn't always gone wrong. You know, people with magic were born and they were seen as useful to society, and it was something that people wanted. But then, as I said, magic went wrong, they didn't know what it was, and people started turning mad, basically, from having power, or that's what people thought. And then as generations went past, they basically lost all memory of what it had been previously.
Mm. Now, why did that interest you?
I guess mainly as a world and a backdrop, and also when you look at inequity. So essentially on this world as well, people are being tarnished with the same brush, basically. So through ignorance, they kill people just because of the potential that they might go bad, not necessarily because of who they are or what they've done in their lives. So I guess that's something else I wanted to highlight in the book as well, that things aren't always what they seem. And that before we judge, we really do need to know the full story of who people are and what they've done with their lives.
So now, what are some of the other themes that run through the book?
There's quite a few of them. I guess another one was my major female character, Jess. I didn't make her the meek, mild, sitting in the palace waiting for some sort of lord or prince to come and save her, basically. She's just as inappropriate as the guys are, and unashamedly so. And so I guess that was a message that I wanted to put out there as well, that the female role wasn't always, or shouldn't always, just be the person sitting in the background. Mm-hmm. So she was a lot of fun to write, and that's definitely something going forward as well.
A little bit of you?
Perhaps maybe just a bit.
I always love characters. I wonder where they come from.
Look, sometimes I wonder where they come from as well. I'm not that much of a plotter, so sometimes I write them and look down and go, wow.
Well,
and they have a mind of their own. They can be a little bit difficult.
I was just going to ask you that, because there are obviously two different camp styles of writing where some people I've spoken to really sit down and plot it all out ahead of time and have spreadsheets, and they know exactly down to the detail about their characters, and others just say, okay, I've come up with this person, and they take off and run around like bad kids. So it sounds like you're more of that side.
Definitely. Yeah, I had no idea. I literally made a blank piece of paper and I started writing. And I did try to plot, because I kept feeling that I should. Mm-hmm. So I would write in the little cards what I thought the scene was going to be, and I write a few in a row. But then when I start to write it, it just had no bearing on what I'd written on the little cards. So I finally just gave up and thought, okay, just go with the flow and write the thing.
So I'm sure then your characters may change the trajectory of the story that you perhaps initially had in mind.
Yeah, they can actually do that, and it does come up with a few surprises here and there. But certainly, it's interesting, because I wonder, it's probably in the back of my mind somewhere, mm-hmm. because then it all makes sense in context of the story and what's going on with them and their lives and everything that's happening. So, you know, I'm not going to look the other way and say, okay, I have to sit here and plot, because generally I literally sat there for a week staring at a blank screen and not really getting anywhere trying to do that. So I've given up on that one.
You know, that's very fascinating if you think about what's actually going on in your brain with these characters, because we're talking as if they're taking off on their own, but really it's coming from you. So maybe they're little teachers or leaders or something that are saying, hey, Catherine, we're going this direction. I mean, it's still part of you. It's just very fascinating.
Yeah, like it is. But even with people who plot, I would assume it's kind of similar. It's all coming from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, I guess, our own lives and contacts and everything we've ever done and every person we've ever met, that's probably just that little piece of something in there.
Right. Wow, writing is so therapeutic, isn't it?
It is, because you can just totally escape in writing. Quite often, I'll just put some music on in the background and just lose myself, and hours can go past. And the outside world is pretty much just locked out. The only thing that's there is the characters and their world.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that since you brought it up, your writing process. Are you one that sets aside a specific time to write, or do you write as it grabs you? How does that process work for you?
I set aside pretty much a particular time. So I have a day job, enough said about that, but I get home and I then sit down at my desk and fire up my computer, and I pretty much write most of the evening, sort of into late afternoon, evening. On the weekends, I tend to cook in bulk, so I'll cook a massive bolognese or something and then freeze it so that during the week, it's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to actually write something every single day. Of course, sometimes life gets in the way and something comes up, but either way, that's generally what I try to do. And then I find it goes on. If I slip and I have a couple of days where I don't, that's when it gets really, really hard to get back into again.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, I'm sure that sometimes you are at work during your day job and an epiphany hits and you would like to stop at work and say, I've got to write this down. Does that happen to you?
Yeah, it does. There may have been a few notes written here and there while I was at work. But generally, the worst part about that is then it's on a piece of paper, and I tend to lose the piece of paper. So that doesn't really do me much good. But I think the act of just writing even a few dot notes down just cements it in my brain for when I get home.
Mm-hmm. Same thing in the middle of the night. You wake up and you have this great idea and you think you're going to remember it. And then in the morning, it's gone.
That is so frustrating when that happens. But I do have a notebook by my bed as well. But yeah, when you're in that situation where you can't write something down, if I'm in the car and I'm driving, I think, yep, I'll remember this when I get into the office, or I'll remember this when I get out. No, it's gone.
I think everyone can relate to that. Absolutely. So we kind of touched on it when we were talking about writing could be therapeutic. But as you've been writing this book, what have you learned about yourself? Did anything occur to you that was almost an aha moment that said, wow, I didn't know that about me?
I'm a really good procrastinator. I can procrastinate with the best of them. I think that this first book took just over 2 years to write, but probably because I would, at the start, I would sit down to write and then I would go, oh, wait a minute, I need a coffee. So I'd huddle off downstairs and go put the kettle on. Go back upstairs, sit down and stare at my computer and then go, kettle's probably boiled now. Walk back downstairs, make myself, like literally I would do this for hours and find some other reason to do something else except buckle down and write. So, and I never realized I was that until I started trying to finish this thing.
That is so funny. Is it getting better with time?
Definitely.
Yes.
As I said, as long as I get into the habit. Mm-hmm. And just, that's what I do. I get home, I get in front of my computer, and now I just write. So I've gone from maybe writing a couple of hundred words, if I was lucky, I tend to write about 1,500, I guess, a night during a weekday,
mm-hmm.
and about 5,000 odd during the weekends on the Saturday and Sunday. So it's going along a lot better now that I'm concentrating on it. And I'm aware that all of those little instincts to, oh, let's just go get a coffee, is me just trying to, you know, find something else to do.
Well, I would imagine now that your first book is out, you've got readers and fans who are awaiting a second book. So that's probably some motivation to keep writing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And they're not backwards in coming forwards and asking me where the next book is. As soon as they finished the first book, I got the first message of, you know, where's the next one?
So where is the next one?
It's being drafted right now. It's about 60,000 words in at the moment. But I've already written the end, so that's not an issue either. It's just writing now between where I'm up to now and that end state. It is the book two of the series. Right. It definitely follows on from Shattering Dreams. And then there will be a third book. So the second book at the moment is has the working title of Path of the Broken.
Can you share a little peek into that without giving us any spoilers?
Sure. Basically, it follows on pretty much directly a couple of months after the end of Shattering Dreams. And as the title would suggest, their worlds don't really get any better. It's kind of falling on from that, you know, when things start going wrong in your life, and I'm sure it happens to all of us, and then everything that could possibly go wrong for you starts going wrong. And essentially for my three main characters, they're off on different paths. They do reconnect towards the middle of the book, though. And generally that's through things going wrong. But throughout the book, they're basically learning a little bit more about who their enemy is and what happened basically to cause the problem with magic, and that it's not actually the magic in the world, which I call the veil, that's wrong. It is something else, and it's the person that is their main enemy, essentially. So it's all linking back from history where things first went wrong into the current day, essentially.
All right, so a little bit about how to deal with adversity, too.
So they basically are thrown out of the world that they're in and that comfort zone, and each in their own way has to deal with what they're confronted with and who they are now, basically, and essentially grow up, I guess.
And the relationship between them.
Definitely, and that's a core thing for all three of them, is that friendship that they shared, that they didn't have or they didn't feel that they had a lot else going for them. In Shattering, they were surrounded by people, but yet felt alone, essentially, other than a few other relationships that they had. Yet in book two, they've gone their own ways, yet that friendship between the three of them basically is a core thing throughout the whole book and will be relevant towards the middle end, and as well as book three.
Okay. All right. So you really have some clear thoughts for book three as well.
Yes, I actually know what the end of book three is as well, and I've written at least the snapshot scene, basically, for the end of that one as well.
Okay. Do we end at three books with that series?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right. We end at three books. I may go back and write either, I don't know whether it'd be a one book or two or a three, but the way back in history when magic wasn't a bad thing and things hadn't gone wrong, and trail into where it did go wrong. So that might be an entirely different series. But there are three characters in the current book that were alive back in that day. So I may follow them through their world and what happened to them, essentially.
Okay. So this is a genre you really enjoy writing.
Definitely. I've loved fantasy science fiction basically since I was a kid, basically. I've got over 1,000 books sitting in my shelf, and that's just the paperbacks and hardcovers of that particular genre, let alone everything else. And then all the e-books, which are very handy when you travel. So I've got a lot of those as well.
Wow. So is there another genre you would ever consider jumping into?
Reading, sure, and I have done, but writing, I don't think so. I'll probably stick with fantasy. At least that's the idea. Maybe science fiction, but that's pretty similar. There's, you know, the science rather than magic.
Mm-hmm. Now, who do you find is your audience for this genre?
Mostly adults at this point, and it seems to be evenly mixed from what I can see between male and female.
Interesting.
Equally, they both seem to like it or dislike it. There's obviously people who go, you know what, I don't like that element. And that's absolutely fine too. But it does tend to be the adult demographic rather than very young people. Mm-hmm. I don't think shattering is necessarily that bad when it comes to a younger readers, but it would definitely, I'm thinking, be in the older young adult market rather than sort of below the age of 15. I think there's a little bit too much pointy end of the sword and death going on in the book for really young readers. And probably a little bit long too. They might sort of get a little bit bored and wander away before they get to the end.
True.
Even when I was younger, though, I didn't tend to read anything that would probably be defined as young adult as such. You know, I was reading Asimov and books like that even when I was a teenager. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that young people would like the book and like to read it too.
Right. No, I get that. When you get some real voracious readers, they tend to read way above their typical reading level.
Right. And the ones that aren't reading as much probably aren't reading the particular genre that I write.
Exactly.
Anyway.
I got it. So as you're writing, are you thinking of your readers and having a hope for them? Or is this more, I don't know, a creative cathartic thing for you?
I'm not really thinking of the readers when I'm writing, to be honest. I'm just thinking of the story and putting it together and making sure it makes sense. So, the fun part is the draft, obviously, and then the tedious work part is the rewrite after rewrite after rewrite, trying to make sure everything makes sense, I guess.
So then, after these rewrites, you're sending it out to editors and having other people look at it?
Right, yeah. So, after I was pretty much happy with it and had everything lined up, I sent it to some early readers, so a group of about 12 people. From some I knew, some I didn't know really at all, and some for different reasons. Some had a thing for, say, hand-to-hand combat and fighting. Other people just didn't read fantasy at all, but read a lot. So I asked them to look out for different things in the book and just give me feedback, which they did, which was really, really handy. Then I did another rewrite based on some of that feedback. And then that's when I sent it to the editor. And it went through, I got three runs, I guess, by the editor before it was done.
So, so important. I can't tell you how many times I've read books that were amazing books, but clearly the editing process was skipped. And then it's hard to get through. So very, very important not to skip that process.
Oh, definitely. And I got so much from the editing process itself. The first one was a manuscript assessment. Given it was my first book, I thought that would be a good thing to do. And one of the things I got from that versus the early readers was that, and it was quite interesting, the early readers could say to me, I didn't like this element, but I'm not sure what it was. Mm-hmm. Whereas the manuscript assessment said, I didn't like this element, this is why, and then later on, I think you could fix this here, here, and here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it became an invaluable process.
Yep.
And certainly the editing itself is more than just correcting sort of commas and full stops, which I think is what a lot of people think it is, even down to things like they would pick up a particular sentence and say, oh, okay, this is what I think you mean, and they would like rewrite it slightly differently, but what you've actually said is this. And I'd sit there and look at it and read it out loud to myself and go, they're right.
And, you know, that's another difficult thing for, I think, a writer to say is, yes, they're right. Sometimes we get so attached to what we've written and we think we love it so much that when someone does have a critical piece of advice, it's hard to take.
It definitely is. But I think once you jump into that process with an editor, you kind of have to trust that they're the expert and I'm going to listen
right.
to them. And I'm not, that's why I'm actually hiring them for this part of that process. That, and you just really can't, when you've gone over something so many times yourself and you've written it, you only see what you think you've written, not what's actually there. Whereas someone with a clean, like fresh eyes looking over it actually sees what you've written. So, and they can point that out to you.
Oh, I love that you said fresh eyes, because I was thinking of that. My daughter and I, sometimes we would rearrange the furniture in a particular room, and then we'd walk out of the room and wander around the house and then come back to it with what we called fresh eyes. And you need it. You almost like to cleanse your palate before you go back in again. So I think fresh eyes is very important.
Oh, definitely. And even writing, like when I, between the first draft and the rewrite, I put it down nearly a month, I think, before I had a bit of a break, then picked it up, read through it, and went in again. So I didn't just keep going day after day on the whole thing. And I think having that break certainly helped put things in perspective when I realized, okay, things aren't quite in the order they need to be, and it helps you move forward.
I'm glad we're having this conversation. I think it's very important for those who are writing to hear what it is that we're saying and know that it's just part of the process. Talk to us about your cover art. Where did that come from?
I actually, again, went to a professional with that one, so Fiona Jag Media. Really lovely lady. She held my hand through the whole thing. She did listen to what I wanted, which was I wanted my three main characters on the cover. But again, this was a process where I was willing to be guided. I perfectly admit I'm terrible at art. I did a double when I was in school of art, and I came out the other end not being able to draw. I'm just really, really bad at it. So I didn't con myself into thinking that I was, but I did a lot of research, which basically suggested that's one of the things that you need to get right if you want your book to be picked up. And that's equally the same in sort of Amazon and Apple and all the online stores as what it is in a bricks and mortar store. It's the cover that they're looking at first, usually, and the colors and titles, and then they pick it up and read the blurb on the back. So it's really important to get those things right.
Absolutely. You know, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but obviously we do. You can't read it, so you do have to go by that first impression. So covers are extremely important. So is that process. Well, Catherine, we've talked about your book and your process, which I was interested to share with everyone. Is there anything that we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
Not really. I think we went through just about everything quite well. Surprised me how fast the time has gone.
I know. It always zips right by. People think, 30 minutes, I don't have enough to talk about. Well, yeah, you do.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
See, we surprised you. I'm glad.
You did.
Well, now, where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book, Shattering Dreams?
Well, they could go to my website, so catherinemwalker.com. It's got all about my book, and there's a little button there that'll bring up all of the store, individual store buttons that you can buy it from. Essentially, it's on most of your online retailers, so Amazon and Apple. It's in Barnes and Noble as well. So pretty much any of the electronic formats, you can actually find my book.
All right. You are in all the places you're supposed to be and at the website catherinemwalker.com. And that's Catherine with a C, Catherine M. Walker, W-A-L-K-E-R, CatherineMWalker.com. The title of the book is Shattering Dreams. Catherine, any final words before we say goodbye?
Well, I'm actually kind of excited. I'm coming to the WorldCon in San Jose in August.
Oh.
So hopefully I'll get to see some fans there and greet a few people. So I'm looking forward to coming over.
Oh, exciting. Well, welcome to the US of A, and that'll be a great trip for you. And I hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for today and for sharing you and for calling us in these wee early hours for you. So thank you so much.
No, thank you, Pat.